Rapid Fire. Legion Towns Through the Lens. Four American Legion posts in rural corners of California, Nebraska, Illinois, and Virginia opened their doors, hearts, and histories to photographer-writer Mariah Carson beginning in 2014. It all started when Carson stopped along a country road to take a photo of a grain elevator. A Legionnaire saw her, said hello, and invited her to drop by the post for prime rib that evening. She was impressed and inspired. 3 years and thousands of miles later, American Legion, her book of images and words, revealed the faces, feelings, and textures of life in towns of 1,000 or less. Frustration and jubilation, hard work and hard luck, patriotism and camaraderie, love and tragedy are all layered to paint rural America as it really is in four unique locations. The overarching message is found on a welcome sign she photographed, "Cody Welcomes You, a Town Too Tough to Die." This book combines my love of small-town America with my unique sense of patriotism, Carson writes in the introduction. This work will increase public awareness, recognize member service, and celebrate the veteran community. She spent 2 years with Franklin Grove, Illinois, Post 497, Bombay, California, Post 801, Cheriton, Virginia, Post 56, and Cody, Nebraska, Post 319. The book is divided into sections based on each community, each opening with a satellite photo of the town and the district landscape on which it rests. As she worked on the project, Carson made a discovery. Her grandfather was a founding member of American Legion Post 777 in Chicago. When I realized this lineage afforded me the privilege to join the Legion family as an auxiliary member, the choice was clear. It would be Auxiliary Unit 319 in the Nebraska Sandhills, one of the most beautiful places on earth. MariahCarson.com/American Legion. The Great War 100, Honor and Remembrance, A New Kind of Life. Editor's Note. Throughout the Great War Centennial, the American Legion magazine will publish excerpts from the letters of D.B. Bernard Ryan of Albion, New York, who served as an Army infantry officer and helped found American Legion Sherritt Post 35 in 1919. 309th Infantry, Camp Dix, New Jersey, October 7, 1917. Dear Mother, I can't believe that it is October, that your sweet peas have gone, and the vines have turned brown, and the shrubs have done flowering. Whatever happens, I shall always carry the memory of the beauty and freshness of the place when I arrived home in August, the placidity after the days and months of anxiety and more or less strife at Madison Barracks. This afternoon I am taking off, although I am really on the job, and may be sent for any minute if something comes up. Captain Segarra has gone away. I have been outside kicking about a football with some four or five officers. The afternoon is warmer and bright, but very fall-like. At least it would seem so were I cross-country hiking with Larry Botsford, as I did 3 years ago, or climbing the Palisades or strolling up Riverside Park, as I did last year. Since May, I have seemed to be disassociated from former familiar incidents, pursuits, and ambitions, a new kind of life. I wonder if I will ever take up with the old again. Surely I will still long for the theater, for a good hot game of tennis, for the bustle of Times Square and the smell of grease paint, for the calm quiet of a hammock behind the vines on the porch on a still moonlight night, for the joy of the beach at Atlantic City, and the calm, lonesome, and gradually growing into oppressive sadness landscape from our west door, but they are all far, far away. When it is all over, I dare say I will want to get away entirely from all strife and struggle and just live somewhere in the great outdoors, a good, strenuous, athletic life, the life I have always desired and that has always been denied me, is denied me now, even in the Army, where there is such a chance for it, for I am put on paperwork and feeding. October 17, 1917. I noticed an ad of the service flag in Lord and Taylor Space in the Times last Sunday. Also some a vendor had in Wrightstown the same day, but I didn't buy from him as I would doubt the quality and the price. Some Rochester stores would have them, I should think. Why don't you get in a few to sell and have a flagpole put up at home with the flag flying and the small service flag beneath it? One star for me. October 30th, 1917. Pouring rain again since early morning, but it is now reaching 11 a.m. and actually indicates a clearing. You should see this place when it rains, mud or flooded everywhere. The QM trucks get stuck making deliveries of meat and produce, and the trucks from Trenton or other points sometimes get here the next day. Your Halloween cards are surely very attractive. I will put them up on the wall. They were also a surprise. I had forgotten that the day existed. I hope you are following the daily news. The Italian defeat is received rather grimly here. As I intimated last summer, I look for the war to last for a long, long time, as the song goes. Have you heard it? I may be gone for a long, long time. Love, D.B.R. Indianapolis found. Famous Navy cruiser sunk by the Japanese in World War II, discovered in Philippine Sea. Wreckage from the USS Indianapolis was discovered on August 18th by the expedition crew of research vessel RV Petrel, which is owned by Microsoft co-founder and philanthropist Paul G. Allen. Indianapolis was found 5,500 meters below the surface, resting on the floor of the North Pacific Ocean. To be able to honor the brave men of the USS Indianapolis and their families through the discovery of a ship that played such a significant role in World War II is truly humbling, Allen said. As Americans, we all owe a debt of gratitude to the crew for their courage, persistence, and sacrifice in the face of horrendous circumstances. I hope everyone connected to this historic ship will feel some measure of closure at this discovery, so long in coming. The Indianapolis was tragically lost in the final days of World War II when it was torpedoed by a Japanese submarine, July 30, 1945. The ship sank in 12 minutes, making it impossible to deploy much of its life-saving equipment. Prior to the attack, Indianapolis had just completed its secret mission of delivering components of one of two nuclear weapons that were dropped on Japan. Of the 1,196 sailors and Marines on board, only 317 survived. Even in the worst defeats and disasters, there is valor and sacrifice that deserve to never be forgotten, said Sam Cox, director of the Naval History and Heritage Command. They can serve as an inspiration to current and future sailors enduring situations of mortal peril. They are also lessons learned, and in the case of the Indianapolis, lessons relearned, that need to be preserved and passed on so the same mistakes can be prevented and lives saved. For more than two decades, I've been working with the survivors. To a man, they have longed for the day when their ship would be found, solving their final mystery, said retired Captain William Toti, spokesman for the Indianapolis survivors. They all know this is now a war memorial and are grateful for the respect and dignity that Paul Allen and his team have paid to one of the most tangible manifestations of the pain and sacrifice of our World War II veterans. As a naval flagship of the Fifth Fleet, the sunken Indianapolis was the object of many previous search efforts. Allen had recently acquired and retrofitted the 250-foot RV Petrel with state-of-the-art subsea equipment capable of diving to 6,000 meters, 3.5 miles. The other key factor in the discovery was information that surfaced in 2016 by Richard Hulver, a historian with the Naval History and Heritage Command, which led to a new search area to the west of the original presumed position. The Petrel team will continue surveying the site as weather permits and was to conduct a live tour of the wreckage in coming weeks. Indianapolis remains the property of the Navy and its location is confidential and restricted. Books. War had visited them in the harshest way. The following is an excerpt from My Life in Lens, the story of a Marine Corps combat correspondent by retired Captain Robert Bowen, available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and iUniverse. Bowen is a past National Vice Commander for the American Legion. February 26, 1967, had been a lazy sort of day. Gassaway, another correspondent, and I had played Scrabble and Pinochle most of the afternoon and into the evening. We were still at it at 3:10 a.m. when the first explosion shattered the quiet of the night, then another and another, followed by sirens. The explosions were coming from the direction of the Da Nang airfield. It was under attack. I grabbed my camera, flak jacket, 45 caliber pistol, and canteen, asked Gassaway for the keys to the AP Jeep, and raced off into the night. I followed a fire truck going past the press center. It was on its way to the village of Ap Ba, just outside the fence, along the east side of the airbase. I entered several tin and wood huts that had been severely damaged. In one of them, a young woman lay dead in her bed. In another, a woman lay dead on the floor, and two Vietnamese soldiers were removing her gold rings by candlelight. Outside, several villagers lay dead on pieces of corrugated metal roofing. The elders stood or squatted and stared in disbelief. They had lived a relatively secure life in the shadow of the massive airfield, used by both U.S. and Vietnamese military. The war had visited them in the harshest way. The number of rockets fired in the wee hours of February 27th varied depending on who was keeping score, but the casualty figure was not disputed. 11 airmen and one Marine were killed, and 35 wounded on the airfield. 13 planes were damaged. Up Ba suffered a much greater loss. 150 homes were destroyed. 35 villagers were killed, and 70 were wounded. The area where the rockets were launched was known as Happy Valley. Elephant grass grew as tall as 10 feet, providing excellent cover and concealment for the enemy coming down out of the mountain. After that first 140-millimeter rocket attack on Da Nang, Happy Valley acquired a new nickname, the Rocket Belt. Share your memoirs, poems, photos, videos, and books online at www.legion.org/mywords. Capitol Hill. Senate leaders unveil new authorization for use of military force. Senators Jeff Flake, Republican Arizona, and Tim Kaine, Democrat Virginia, are proposing a new authorization for the use of military force, AUMF, for the war on terrorism that would repeal the previous post-9/11 authorization and provide fresh congressional approval for current and future counterterrorism missions against ISIS, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and other jihadist groups. As Defense News reports, under the new bill, while the president would be able to immediately begin military action in another country against those groups, the action would stop if Congress votes to disapprove within 60 days. However, the president does not need congressional approval in countries where fighting is already happening: Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, Yemen, Somalia, and Libya. Flake notes that when the original AUMF was passed into law in September 2001, only 135 of the 435 current House members and only 23 of the 100 current senators were serving in Congress. Active duty. Rotational deployments more costly. A study conducted by the U.S. Army War College concludes that Washington's post-Cold War reliance on temporary rotational deployments in Europe and South Korea actually costs more than permanent basing options. As Stars and Stripes reports, the study undermines a decade-old Defense Department argument that shuttling units back and forth from the United States is a more efficient way of doing business than basing them overseas. Citing the study, Rotational Deployments versus Forward Stationing, Stars and Stripes notes that basing brigades in Europe and South Korea would be cheaper over time, serve as a stronger demonstration of commitment to allies in the respective regions, and address morale concerns. For armored brigades, it costs about $135 million more annually to maintain a continuous presence of soldiers on rotation from the United States to Europe. Legion Baseball. Henderson, Nevada, Post 40 claims ALWS title. Henderson, Nevada, Post 40 went from expecting elimination to lifting the 2017 American Legion World Series ALWS trophy in just 48 hours after a 2-1 victory over Omaha, Nebraska, Post 1 on August 15th. After a loss August 13th, Nevada thought it had been eliminated, but through a tiebreaker, Post 40 advanced. A semifinal win over Bryant, Arkansas, Post 298, the next day, sent the team to the final, where Henderson faced a familiar foe. A rematch of the tournaments, Game 2 proved to be a lot more competitive than the original meeting, where Nebraska slashed 21 hits, one shy of the ALWS record, in a 9-1 rout. It also became the first team in ALWS history with four players each with four or more hits. The same starter for Nebraska in that game, Joshua Culliver, took the hill after a sparkling 7 innings of 2-hit ball August 10th against Nevada. Shane Spencer, just 16, got the call for Nevada. Spencer was coming off his own 7-inning gem, allowing only one hit against Shrewsbury, Massachusetts, Post 397. The teams remained on level, pegging, until the 6th inning, when Henderson's J.J. Smith singled, stole second, and advanced to third on a wild pitch. Nick Thompson did his job to bring in the runner with a sacrifice fly to give the designated visitors the lead. Spencer, who was locked in on the mound, ended the game with more stellar pitching, finishing with a line of 7 innings pitched, 3 hits and only 1 run allowed. For his work on the hill, he was named the 2017 George W. Rulon Player of the Year. "It took a couple innings to settle in because I have never been in this atmosphere before," Spencer said. "I wasn't expecting these awards as a pitcher. It is a great feeling. I've never been on this big of a stage before. I hope I'm here again next year. Jeremy Field. American Legion baseball not only breeds great ball players, but it shows young men how to compete while respecting the game and country. We learned life lessons and how to come together as a team and play for a common cause. Frank Vaccaro, Jr., assistant and third base coach for Shrewsbury, Massachusetts, Post 397, which won ALB's Northeast Regional Tournament against Midland, Michigan, to earn its first appearance in the ALWS. In a tweet, Vaccaro said his team made memories no one can take away. Postseason Award winners: George W. Roulon, American Legion Player of the Year; Shane Spencer, Henderson, Nevada. American Legion Baseball Big Stick Award, Jack Thomas Wold, Henderson, Nevada, 29 total bases. American Legion Baseball Slugger Award, Jordan Patty, Midland, Michigan, 529 batting average. Dr. Irvin L. Click Cowger RBI Award, Zach Lucky, Omaha, Nebraska, 13 RBIs. Bob Felder Pitching Award, Jordan Patty, Midland, Michigan, 19 strikeouts. James F. Daniel, Jr. Memorial Sportsmanship Award, Will Hanifan, Omaha, Nebraska. Jack Williams Memorial Leadership Award, Henderson, Nevada, coaching staff. All-Academic Team, each player receives a $2,500 scholarship. The overall top academic player is named team captain and receives a $5,000 scholarship. The annual All-Academic Team is sponsored by Diamond Sports, a leading manufacturer in baseball merchandise and the official baseball used in ALB national tournaments. Trace Henry, Tupelo, Mississippi, Post 49, team captain. Luke Johnson, East Haddam, Connecticut, Post 156. Antonio Balducci, Mechanicsville, Virginia, Post 175. Jackson Graham, Wilmington, North Carolina, Post 10. Austin Dill, Cape Girardeau, Missouri, Post 63. Anthony Ebensperger, Plum City, Wisconsin, Post 365. Chase Connert, Alma, Nebraska, Post 118. Jarrett Hamby, Rock Springs, Wyoming, Post 24. Marcus Alexander, Warwick, Rhode Island, Post 43. Service. Open your post home for Veterans Day dinner. National Commander Denise Rohan is asking American Legion posts nationwide to host the Mother of All Veterans Day dinners, November 11th, inviting their communities in for food and fellowship. Many posts already conduct Veterans Day parades and observances, Rohan says. Make them even bigger by adding a buffet. Let's add seats at our tables for the people our organization's four pillars are intended to serve. She encourages posts to reach out to local military installations, reserve centers, and National Guard units, as well as veterans and their families who aren't part of the American Legion family, but who would enjoy a nice home-cooked meal and the company of caring people. Invite participants and alumni of Legion youth programs, as well as churches, charitable organizations, and businesses. Noting that there's no one way to do it, Rohan says dinners could double as fundraisers for temporary financial assistance and service officer programs. Posts, units, and squadrons might seek corporate sponsorship to help cover the costs. Whatever the case, think of it as a service, she says. Don't set prices too high for people on fixed budgets to attend, and consider free meals for the homeless or deep discounts for those who have fallen on hard times. Include local media in event planning, too. By promoting Veterans Day dinners online and through social media accounts like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, the entire Legion family benefits from a magnified message. During and after the event, members are encouraged to post photos and stories on social media with the hashtag #LegionFamilyDinner. They can also post photos and stories at www.legiontown.org. At first, visitors may see us serve meals, Rohan says. Once they get to know us, they will see how we serve America. Personal Finance, USAA. Create a windfall for your post and plan for your own. Focus on Finances, J.J. Montanaro. I'm excited about USAA's Salute Your Post giveaway. All you do is sign on or register for USAA membership at www.usaa.com/TAL giveaway between now and October 31st to give your American Legion post a shot at securing a $20,000 windfall. The winner's post, not the winner, gets the money. I'm sure most posts have a long to-do list and wouldn't find it hard to put the money to good use. When it comes to your own finances, a windfall could come in the form of an inheritance, a gift, a lottery win, or even a tax refund. No matter how it comes, it can provide a chance to do some financial good. The key is to have a plan on how you're going to deploy the money to accomplish your goals. Admittedly, I recall at least one time in my life that I frittered away a pretty big windfall. A little of this, a little of that, and before I knew it, the money was gone, and I had a lot less to show for it than I would have liked. Here are a few ideas for your next windfall. Pay down debt. If you have any high-interest consumer debt, why not get rid of some or all of it? It'll save you a lot of wasted interest and could relieve a lot of stress. But you may not want to use the entire windfall to trim your debt, because my second idea is central to avoiding debt in the future. Build an emergency fund. If you don't have the old cash stash of 3 to 6 months' worth of committed expenses set aside as an emergency fund, a windfall provides the opportunity to start building. Otherwise, the next time you get hit with a financial surprise, you may have to turn to a credit card, sell some possessions, or even borrow from friends or family. Save for retirement. Will your windfall be the engine that single-handedly funds your golden years? Unless it's a lottery win, probably not. However, your windfall could be the spark that gets you consistently putting money away in an IRA, Roth IRA, or employer plan. It could be a boost as you sprint to the finish line, that is retirement, or bolster what you already have. Use your windfall to get and keep the retirement ball rolling. Purposeful saving. You already know they're coming. New tires, a new roof, holiday gifts, or maybe even a blow-the-doors-off vacation. Get a head start by placing a portion of your unexpected money into a savings account to help foot the bill. Plan for your next windfall and sign up for the Salute Your Post giveaway so your post has a chance to do the same. www.legion.org/USAA/focus-on-finance. Education, VA benefits, and course repeats. My GI Bill, Veterans and Education by Valerie Hefner. Question. I am enrolled in a community college and using my post-9/11 GI Bill benefits. Unfortunately, I had a rough time last semester due to an illness, so I received a C in my chemistry class. If I am using my GI Bill benefits, is it possible to repeat the course? Answer. According to VA, if you receive a passing grade and the course is successfully completed according to your school, VA will not pay for you to repeat the course. For example, if you are required to get a B in chemistry, you may repeat the course. But if you choose to repeat the course just to bring up your grade, VA will not pay for it. Verbatim. It's like nothing else you will ever see or do. It can be religious. It makes you feel insignificant, like you're just a speck in the whole scheme of things. Michael Leary of San Diego, who photographed the August 21st solar eclipse along with hundreds of other amateur astronomers in Casper, Wyoming. The event was the first full solar eclipse to sweep the United States coast to coast in nearly a century. Youth programs. American Legion Boys Nation brings together best of the best. The 71st session of American Legion Boys Nation in July featured lots of new faces and a goodbye to a familiar one. 98 delegates from 49 states spent a week at Marymount University in Arlington, Virginia, where Program Director Mike Buss congratulated them on their selection. The key word here is opportunity, he said. The American Legion is providing you with that. What you do with it is up to you. Throughout the week, the young senators visited the World War II, Vietnam, and Lincoln memorials and laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns at Arlington National Cemetery. With their counterparts from American Legion, Auxiliary Girls Nation, they also met President Trump at the White House and their senators and representatives on Capitol Hill. Guest speakers included C-SPAN marketing specialists Jeff Kendrick of the Maryland Center for Veterans Education and Training and Holocaust survivor Nessa Godin. Darius Thomas of Alabama was elected president, and Jay Blackburn of Tennessee vice president. To know they're the best of the best, and they elected me to represent them, it just humbles me, Thomas said of his fellow delegates. This year marked the last for past National Commander Bob Turner. As part of the Boys Nation staff, after 35 years as a volunteer, he was a delegate from Georgia Boys State as a youth. It got in my blood, said Turner, who began as a section counselor and moved up to director of activities in the 1990s. In some small way, I felt I was helping develop the youth in our country. Filling Turner's shoes will be past National Commander Dale Barnett of Georgia. Still, Boys Nation won't be the same without the man who's helped shape the program for nearly half of its 71 years. He is Boys Nation, Buss said. Always will be. www.legion.org/boysnation. Careers. Three important trends in writing cover letters. The Job Front by Wendy S. Enelow. How we read has changed remarkably due in large part to the Internet. We tweet 140 characters and text short messages with numerous abbreviations and shortcuts. We read blog posts and quickly skim online communications. That trend has affected how we write and read job search communications. The long and detailed cover letter has been replaced by the more modern, shorter, and easier-to-read e-note. Here's what you need to know to create powerful e-notes that will get you noticed and not passed over. Today's cover letters are e-notes. When was the last time you printed and mailed a letter and resume in response to a job? If you're like most, the answer is never or not in a very long time. Today, you're most likely uploading your letters for online postings or sending them via email. That means your letters should be formatted as e-notes, email messages, and not traditional letters. E-notes don't start with a bland sentence announcing that you're applying for a particular job. Use the subject line for that. Must immediately capture attention. No leisurely introductions. Remember that most of your message may be hidden if viewed on a phone, so give readers a reason to scroll down to learn more. Have a get-to-the-point style with short paragraphs and/or bullet points. Include a signature at the bottom with contact information, phone, email, LinkedIn profile. Letters add value to online applications. When an application indicates that a cover letter is optional, should you or shouldn't you take the time and trouble to include one? In a word, yes, a short letter in the style of an e-note. When employers screen resumes to choose candidates to interview, a lot of the content of those resumes can be similar. When you include a letter with your resume, you can share additional information, emphasize aspects of your background that fit particularly well, and create a connection with each job and company. Good writing, correct spelling, and grammar never go out of style. Yes, your cover letter is a less formal e-note or an uploaded file, but that doesn't mean it can be sloppily written, use texting shortcuts, or have language or spelling errors. Employers judge candidates on the quality of the documents they submit in job applications. These are indicative of the quality of work you will do for that employer if you are hired. Be certain your letters and e-notes are as perfect as your resume. Centennial, Post 133, Carlisle, Arkansas. One of Raleigh Crowder Post 133's most treasured possessions is an old post flag purchased around 1943 when the post was renamed for a local Marine. Raleigh Crowder was killed August 7, 1942, in the assault at Tulagi in the Solomon Islands. Originally chartered in 1920, the post also has an honor ribbon from 1951. Share your post's legacy. Upload stories, photos, and videos of your post's history on the Legion's Centennial Celebration website, www.legion.org/centennial. Active duty. Katrina Girl plans to join military. Nearly 12 years after Air Force Master Sergeant Mike Maroney rescued 3-year-old Lachey Brown from rising waters caused by Hurricane Katrina in 2005, she plans to join the military, the Washington Post reports. Maroney was part of a pararescue team that saved dozens of people after Katrina hit the Gulf Coast. A photo of the two appeared on the cover of People magazine. Citing an interview with Air Force Times, the Post reports that the photo brought Maroney peace during deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan. He reconnected with Brown years after Katrina and was her date at the Junior ROTC Bay High School Military Ball.